Hello, listener. It's Monday again. Can you believe it? Or maybe it's not Monday for you. Maybe you're listening on Tuesday or Thursday. I don't know. But I'm here to welcome you to another episode of Lady Lovin'. I am Lo. I'm here with Jilly and Greta.
Hello.
Sup.
Sup. We have a fabulous guest on the show this week. We are super excited to have her on. I think that we probably have 103 plus questions to ask her. Yeah. So I think that we should just get right into it. We have everybody's favorite OBGYN on the show today, Dr. Angela. Hello.
Hello.
What's good, ladies?
Hi.
I am like over the moon happy to be here.
Our studio audience is clapping for you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so excited.
Yes, we are.
So nothing makes us happier, the three of us happier, than talking about vaginas.
I know.
And and being a woman.
I think also being, you know, getting to that place where you're comfortable to talk about your vagina is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you. So just before we begin, listeners can find Dr. Angela on Facebook at facebook.com/AskDrAngela. You can find her there. She'll answer your questions, guys. And she's going to answer our questions today on the
I think that before we like bombard her with all of our questions, maybe could you give us a little bit of a background on like what made you want to become an OBGYN? What, you
where
know,
are you
sure.
from?
Where are you
Absolutely.
From?
Absolutely.
Where were you conceived?
I was conceived in the Midwest.
Ooh.
I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
My okay. boyfriend's from Columbus.
Oh, shout out to Columbus.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, I am the daughter of a preacher man.
Okay. Ooh.
I have a beautiful wife and a 7-year-old daughter.
Oh.
And I knew that I wanted to be a physician from the time I was like 3 years old.
Oh my gosh.
That's cool.
I know, right? Sometimes you just know what you're supposed to be doing. And so the decision to go into OBGYN for me was easy because I love women. And I feel like so many times women get the short end of the stick when it comes to medicine. I mean, nobody's really promoting, you know, stuff to improve women's sex drives,
right?
You know, so I just wanted to be able to empower women, educate women, and quite frankly, you know, the thing that I love about OBGYN is that 97% of the time my job is really happy. I mean, who doesn't like delivering babies? And then if you go to the technical side of it, you know, I was a huge gamer growing up, which kind of translated into my minimally invasive surgical skills. I do a lot of laparoscopy and things like that.
What's a laparoscopy? So cool.
You know, it's,
I don't,
it's
girl.
Basically, girl, what it is.
I got a lot of questions here.
I'm going to give you a really good example.
Okay.
If you had, I'm going to say like an average size uterus and you wanted to have a hysterectomy, it's not going to be your mama's hysterectomy. You know, back in the day, women were getting completely cut open and having their uterus removed in an open kind of procedure. But, you know, people that had those kinds of surgeries were in the hospital for like 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes a week. If I do your hysterectomy using the robot, most of my patients go home within 24 to 48 hours.
Wow. That's a major procedure.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Major surgery, and you're back to like your day-to-day living with regards to complete recovery in like 2 weeks.
Amazing.
Wow, that's incredible.
So pretty fun. It's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah. Especially because it's probably, there's like always new things every, you know, year, every month coming out that's changing and helping the way that you, you know, deal with your patients.
Absolutely. And the really fantastic thing about it, and this is kind of like the icing on the cake, is like my girlfriends are always like, oh my gosh, Ange, why do you love OBGYN? And when you come and see me in the office, it's like visiting one of your girlfriends. We talk about fashion, family, relationships, and then we throw in like a smidge of medicine to top it off.
A little pap smear.
Yeah, a little pap smear.
It's so funny because I went to my mom's gynecologist when I was, I think I started going when I was like 14 or 15, I don't know, whatever age you start going. And it was a man, and he was like a super, like, fabulous, outrageous gay man that was like, it's in my mind, I was like, why do you want to be an OBGYN?
Right.
And then I really loved him, but I was never able, after I stopped seeing him and I moved to New York, I was never able to really find one that I felt comfortable with.
Right.
And I think it's so important, like, out of every doctor to feel comfortable with, it's your gynecologist or you're someone that's helping you with like your women's health. It's so important. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Your vagina.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is like the, do you think, so should women be getting a pap smear once a year? Is that the normal or is it more than that?
Well, it's really interesting that you should ask that. Because the guidelines for pap smears are changing all the time. I mean, who's not confused? You have OBGYNs that are even confused about the guidelines. First of all, pap smears should not start until you are 21 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
I was getting pap smears as like a 16-year-old.
But even like one girl so I went to school. High school with got had like, she got a pap smear and came back, the, her results came back funky and she had to get all these cysts removed and all of that that were like precancerous. And so like, what do you...
But this is the thing. Most abnormal pap smears are caused by HPV. You guys know about HPV.
Yeah.
Papillomavirus. It's the precursor to cervical cancer. The reason that they're not recommending screening until you're 21 is because in most young, healthy people, your body's going to naturally just get rid of that. Because HPV is a virus. So what was happening in the past is all these young girls were getting all these pap smears. The results were coming back abnormal. And they were being overtreated for something that the body is naturally going to get rid of on its own. And so sometimes as a result of being treated, and sometimes the treatment is a little bit aggressive, i.e. getting like a LEAP procedure where we actually excise those abnormal cells.
Yeah, that's what she had.
That is not without consequences. I mean, further down the road, you know, you may run into issues with something called incompetent cervix, which is where your cervix just shortens without you knowing it. And that in turn can lead to what? Preterm labor and delivery. And I mean, we know, you know, the seriousness of having babies that are born too early. Right. So again, in most young, healthy women, pap smear should not start until you're 21. Okay.
Okay.
So that's that. Once you are like, you know, 25 or so, between 25 and 29, they recommend a pap smear every 3 years. Okay.
Every
Yes.
I was surprised.
Every
year since I was.
Okay. I was really, I went to the gynecologist last year being like, oh my God, I haven't had this done in 2 years. Yep. This is so fucked. Yeah. I'm going to be in so much trouble. And then the doctor was like, no, like you're actually like right on time. They say every 2 to 3 years.
And specifically, if you don't have any history of anything bad going on. Now check this out. If you are over the age of 30 and you have no history of any abnormal pap smears, you know, your last three paps have been normal, yada, 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 you can stretch that out to every 5 years. But listen to me. Okay. Listen to me.
I'm listening.
The deal is most people automatically correlate annual exam, which is when you go see your friendly OBGYN, to pap smears. You still need an annual exam.
Yeah, because you need your, I need my boobs felt,
there it is. There it is. The pap smear is like 3% of the visit.
Yeah.
So can I ask you a question?
You can ask me whatever you want.
So for the annual exam, because in my mind, the annual exam equals a pap smear. It's just one of the many things that happens. So as a doctor, if you're not giving a pap smear to somebody or it's like not scheduled, can you like look down there and be like, I think something might be a little wrong. I think we need to pap smear you.
Well, I don't know that you can like look down there necessarily and say, oh my gosh, I think we need to do a pap. However, when we do take a look inside the vagina, if there's some funky discharge, we can culture that.
Yeah.
But you know, the other significant part about the annual is full body wellness. You know, when I talk to you, I'm talking about new medications. I'm talking about, you know, perhaps some bad habits that we've picked up in between the last time that I've seen you, whether we've started smoking or, you know, new sexual partner, you know, these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So it's a complete, you know, review of what's been happening since we last convened. Maybe you developed some new medical illness. Maybe you're on a new medication.
Right.
Maybe since I saw you, you gained like 15 pounds and we need to talk about diet and exercise. It's like the whole shebang.
Right. But what about like, why not get it every year if you can?
Get pap smear,
yeah.
Well, why would you need it every year?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, if you can, why not? To get the extra, you know? It's like if you get, it's like some people get their teeth cleaned 5 times a year.
But that actually, but I think like when you get your teeth cleaned 5 times a year, you're wasting money and it actually doesn't do anything for your actual oral hygiene.
And the thing with this is, you know, we're just waiting for insurance to kick in. Because pretty soon insurance is going to be like, we're not paying for that because all the data and the literature now shows that pap screening is not necessary.
I have a question.
Go for it.
At what age should women start getting mammograms? Like, I have a history of breast cancer in my family, and I have been wanting to get tested for the BRCA gene. Mm-hmm. Now, my aunt got tested for it, and she tested negative. Mm-hmm. My mother died of lung cancer, not related to breast cancer. Yeah. But my grandmother had metastasizing breast cancer,
right,
that, you know, she got when she was 30, and that she kind of stuck with her till she was 70, and she, whatever, eventually died,
right,
of heart disease. Right. But I, like, when should I get tested for that? When do I start getting mammograms? And are home exams with your breasts still a thing?
Those are such good questions. I am so happy you ladies have me onto the show. On the show,
me too.
Yes, this kind of stuff. So first of all, with regards to when you should start getting mammograms, there's been like a lot of debate in the news. I'm sure you guys are aware that the American Cancer Society, mm-hmm, recently changed their screening guidelines.
Yeah.
What you need to know is that ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, who governs the way that most OBGYNs practice, did not change their dictate. And what that means is that we still recommend that screening begins at the age of 40. Now, in someone that has a very strong family history of breast cancer, first-degree relatives, like, say, for instance, if your mom had breast cancer, then your screening would begin 10 years prior to the age that that relative was diagnosed. So, mm-hmm, for instance, if your mom was 40 when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, your screening would start at 30.
Got it.
Let me take that a bit further. With regards to self-breast exams, really what I recommend to my patients and what the college, and when you hear me say the college, I'm speaking about ACOG, what they're now recommending is something called breast awareness. Mm-hmm. And what that is for patients is just knowing what your breasts normally look and feel like. So when I see patients at the time of an annual exam and I do the breast exam, I will say to them, this is your baseline normal. Based on my clinical exam, mm-hmm, your breast exam feels completely normal. So look in the mirror, you're gonna look at your breast size, you're gonna note their consistency, the shape, and if there's any change from that baseline, that's when you need to let your OBGYN know. Mm. So it's, you know, it's not so much doing what we, you know, used to recommend, the self-breast exam every month where, right, you know, you use a certain technique in the shower, whether, yeah, it's going in circles, up and down. You know, right now it's just really knowing what is your baseline, what your breasts look and feel like. And that's going to be different for everybody.
Mm. That's what I do. I just sort of like feel around. I'm like, okay, cool. We're like the same as we were.
Yeah.
The same as we were.
Me and my two breasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And lastly, my question about the BRCA.
Yes.
Gene.
With regards to your question about the BRCA gene, if you have a strong family history of cancer, whether it's breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, we know that some cancers run in groups. I would speak to a genetic counselor.
Okay.
And then they, based on your family history, will determine whether or not they think you're a good candidate. And the reason that I think is necessary is because if they give you the green light,
got it,
it's going to save you a big bill from the insurance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And cool. Also, let's say that you do find out that you have the BRCA. Mm-hmm. What do you do from there?
Well, it depends on where you are in life. You know, some women will get an elective mastectomy. Some women will get, you know, ovaries taken out. Look at Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Yeah. Carrier. So when I say it depends on where you are in life, you know, have you had kids? And, you know, you have to consider all the risk factors. Based on your particular test results, what is the likelihood that you are going to develop a cancer, whether it's ovarian or whether it's breast?
Hmm. Got it.
Interesting.
All scary shit.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's not scary if you're informed. I think the scariest thing about women's health is I feel like there's such a lack of information. And there's such a lack of information, like young girls that are out there having sex that are like starting at the age of like 12. I mean, I started having sex when I was 14, mm-hmm, which is so young, and I'm so thankful that I had a mom that was like, okay, well, now we need to do this.
Right.
But I think that the access for women's health is just so little, especially with, like, you know, now especially trying to take away like Planned Parenthood and all of this stuff.
I know.
They better not take it away.
Well, these Planned Parenthood is not a place where everyone goes to just get an abortion. That's like such a small percentage of what they offer.
Planned Parenthood has been a savior for giving women access to like birth control pills, etc. I mean,
even
Pap
smears.
Absolutely.
Everything. Everything.
Absolutely.
Cancer screenings, everything. Like general family planning. Yes. Like literally everything.
I went to a Planned Parenthood once in college.
Yeah.
How did it go?
There's people protesting outside, and I had to walk through a metal detector. It's scary as shit.
I yell at the protesters outside the one on Mulberry Street all the time.
Oh my God, me too.
There was a man standing there with a little fetus sculpture in the in his belt buckle, and I looked at him, and he had the worst toupee I've ever seen in my life. And I looked at him, and I said, "You do not have any right to be protesting this. You should be lucky that whatever vagina you came out of let you stay here, and your wig sucks."
Yeah.
What did he say? Yeah. What did he say? So dumbfounded by me, and I was like walking with my dog and my sister, and my sister was like, "Yeah," and I was like, "Yeah."
Well, I mean, you're protesting Planned Parenthood in Manhattan. What do you expect?
So crazy.
Of course, people are gonna fuck with you.
Can we talk birth control?
Wait, I have one more question.
Okay,
about mammograms. Actually,
go for it.
If you have breast implants, how do you get a mammogram?
You know, that's a great question. People sometimes assume that because they have mammograms that they can't get imaging. Most of the women that I give scripts for get the routine screening mammogram, you know, and sometimes...
If they have implants.
Yep, even if you have implants.
But, like, doesn't that machine squish them and break them?
I haven't seen many mammograms rupture implants. And if you're worried about that, some people would do, like, ultrasound. Some people will do, like, breast MRI.
So there's ways around it.
Alternatives. Got it. Yes.
Well, if you have breast implants, how often do you have to get them changed?
Now that I don't know.
Your breast implants change?
Don't you have to switch them out every 10 years or some shit like that?
I have no idea.
People have implants for years.
People have implants. I mean, my mom's friend has had the same breasts for literally like 45 years.
I thought you had to switch them out. I don't even
know. I think it's only if something goes wrong.
They pop. Yeah.
Like if something happens.
I don't know. No, I don't know much about the implants.
I don't put them in, so I don't know. I just see a lot of them.
You just see a lot of them?
I just see a lot of them.
Are all of our breast questions done for now so we can move on to another area of the body?
Sure. I don't think I have any more.
How big are my boobies going to get when I have a baby?
I mean, literally, my boobs, I'm going to look like Jessica Simpson when she was pregnant.
Like, are they going to double in size?
You know what? Everybody is so different. I got to tell you, the increase in breast size was one of the perks that I experienced of being pregnant. Because, you know, I'm a very petite woman. I'm like a good A cup. And I went to like a nice solid B. I was so happy. I was pumping them up.
Yeah. I'm about to go from I got a breast reduction, and I'm about to go back to being a G. When I get pregnant, my tits are going to be eating my face. Yeah, G for Greta.
G for Greta.
Okay, let's go.
Mine disappeared. The breast disappeared.
Oh, they go away.
They go away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that was my only other boob question.
Okay. I want to talk about birth control. I want to talk about IUDs, and I want to talk about discharge.
Mm. Let's talk about birth control.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's hit that one.
Birth control.
What you got?
Well, what are the different, besides like condoms, birth control pills, what are some other birth control options? Do you think that like going based off like the time of the month and following a calendar is effective?
And not use it. Wait, and like not using anything.
Like a lot of people, there's this like new thing where you follow the calendar. Well, it's not a new thing; it's been around forever. But you follow the calendar because there's only certain days out of the month that you can actually get pregnant.
Oh, and then I would never let someone come inside of me with. It doesn't matter what day it is.
Well, maybe they don't have to actually go inside of you.
If
on that
so
day.
Many people, if so many people are convinced, you know, Jesus was real, like the Son of God, then like, why are people fucking with no protection on off days?
No, I'm just saying. What do you think about that method?
You know, any method is only going to be as reliable as the user. So I always tell folks, when it comes time to choosing what form of birth control is going to be right for you, it all comes down to compliance, which is the ability to follow the directions or use as directed.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're one of those people that's like in the heat of the moment, can all of a sudden, you know, it's getting good, whip out your phone and say,
Oh, yeah.
You know? Sorry. I don't know too many people that can do
bad
that.
Bad day of the month.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's true. Not
That's
today.
Very true.
But a lot of people use, like, you know, the consistency of the discharge to determine ovulation.
Oh,
and that's
no,
all fine. But I don't have time for all of that.
See, I personally am very afraid of hormones. Mm-hmm. So I do not take birth control pills. Mm-hmm. I'm also a prude, so I don't have sex anyway. But so I don't take birth control pills because I'm afraid of, like, all of the hormones.
Right.
And what do you think about, like, IUDs without hormones, like the copper IUD?
This is what I'm going to tell you about the copper IUD. The copper IUD, and I mean, you know, God love the copper IUD. It certainly is, you know, a good method for some people. But, you know, it's probably my least favorite form of contraception. And this is why. When you start looking at, like, the pros and cons, you know, pros of the copper IUD is you can leave it in place for up to 10 years. You know, fucking put it in. You're good for 10 years. Boom. You know, no fuss, no muss. You don't have to remember it. Okay? However, the top two side effects of that copper IUD are going to be more painful periods and heavier periods. Who wants that?
No one.
Now, certainly, people choose that copper IUD for many different reasons, one of which, I don't like hormones. Yeah. Hormones make me, and that's fine. The other reason is going to be, like, folks that have some kind of contraindication to being on hormones, whether it's, you know, a history of cancer.
Yeah, because I have a history of cancer in my family, so I'm not adding any more hormones to
my
body.
So it might work for you. Everybody's a little bit different.
But I have the copper IUD, and it is so fucking painful.
Oh, there you go. Thank
you. Wait, do you still have it in?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And is your period awful?
Awful.
Oh,
Lo, take it out.
Thank you, Lo.
What do I put in there
she
instead?
She doesn't want hormones. What
I feel that. I mean, I chose that because I was on birth control pills for years, and the hormones made me feel really funky.
Yeah, sometimes they do. Make you crazy.
You gotta, I guess, like, that's the thing is you just have to deal with the pain. Women, we have to deal with so much shit.
Yes, we do.
That's why we're so strong.
I was on birth control for 10 years, and I also don't take birth control right now, and I definitely only occasionally practice very safe sex, which is really stupid. I am monogamous with my boyfriend, but and obviously, like, pulling out is not a method. No,
I read an article recently that it was either in New York Magazine or the New York Times or something that said that this is the dirty secret your gynecologist doesn't want to tell you is that pulling out is almost as good as wearing a condom.
Yeah, but what about pre-cum?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, can pre-cum get
this
pregnant?
This is the thing. Pulling out.
No, it's not
for all these out of order questions that we have.
We're like screaming at Dr. Angela to answer all our questions.
It's so good. It's so good. But this is what I'm going to tell you. I'm happy that you're in a mutually monogamous relationship.
Me too,
but
Greta.
But the thing...
I need to figure out some kind of contraception.
The thing that I like about condoms is I don't care what kind of birth control you were on. Condoms are what helped prevent the good stuff that ain't good. And I don't need to run that list about the stuff that ain't good.
They give me yeast infections.
No, okay, here's the thing.
You're using the wrong ones.
Sustain, a woman who is on our podcast, who is a friend of ours, developed these condoms that are
organic.
They're wonderful. And some condoms, like Trojan condoms, for example, would really irritate my vagina. And they would, like, I would just, like, it would make me, like, dry when I, like, wasn't, when I was, like, in the moment, it would hurt me. And then afterward, it would hurt. And it wasn't good. Yeah. But Systane condoms, I swear, like, when I am being a good person, they're great. And I'm lucky that I also have a boyfriend that is very pro condom.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, like, if I were to get pregnant, that would literally just be my fault. You know, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, yep, I knew this. I was having unprotected sex and I'm not on birth control. So obviously those two things equal a baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. So do you think that hormones are that bad? Like, do you think that we should have all of these, like, birth control craze or what's going to happen in 10 years from being on the pill? Like, can you speak on that?
I can absolutely speak on that. I don't think that the birth control pills are all that bad, because what people don't realize is that, yes, they're hormones, and yes, you know, specifically birth control pills are used for contraception, i.e. to stop pregnancy. But, you know, the benefits that people never talk about is that it's protective against what? Uterine cancer. Is that it's protective against what else? Ovarian cancer. And that's sustained up to 10 years post being on it.
Really?
Damn. I didn't know that. Yeah. So those are things.
Now I'm like, I will get back on that orthotricycline.
That people don't realize. You know?
Yeah.
So just, you know, food for thought.
But you don't think going like the most natural you can go, like if you're fine getting a copper IUD, dealing with the pain, or you're fine using condoms, don't you think that's a better way to go?
I think whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
Different strokes for different folks.
I'm very interested in birth control as being a preventative for uterine and ovarian mm-hmm. cancer. I think that that is, like, that to me is more of a draw to get back on the yes. pill than the pregnancy thing. Because yes. there are, like Jillie is saying, condoms,
yes.
getting an IUD, all these other things. Is the IUD with hormones the same? I'm assuming it's like the same kind of prevention as the pill?
The IUD, i.e. with hormones, Mirena or Skylar, yes, because of the progesterone effect.
Got it.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Can an IUD cause yeast infections?
Any foreign body uh-huh. inside the vagina
yeah.
can kind of alter the vaginal pH, which basically is what causes like yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis. Mm. I have a lot of ladies that I see that get an IUD and they're like, oh my gosh, now I've got this discharge. And a lot of times it can be secondary to having that IUD inside the uterus.
Hmm. Interesting.
Going back to a previous question.
Sure.
A few minutes before. Can you get pregnant from pre-cum?
Sorry. She's asking for a friend.
If there's some sperm in that ejaculate, yes. It's like somebody asked me the other week, can I get pregnant if I have sex in a hot tub?
What?
In a pool? I know, girl. They are still asking this question. And this is my answer. As long as there was a penis inside your vagina, the answer to that
is yes. So then the pull-out yes. method may not work.
There is nothing that is 100%.
Exactly.
Remember that.
Except article. For abstinence.
Well, and again, that goes back
that
to
article you read
if you
true.
Buy into that, you know, Mother Mary, Virgin Mary story.
I mean, you know. See, I don't practice, you know, abstinence, but I'm not having, I guess, any intercourse with anyone until I'm in love.
Okay.
At the moment, which is, you know.
Good for you.
It's interesting time for me right now.
You're
but
just like Ciara and who does she marry?
Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very chic.
If someone, let's say, I don't know, if someone comes on your back or comes on your stomach or comes on a part of your body mm-hmm. that isn't your vagina and you think, oh my God, this is going to somehow drip its way down and march the little spermies into my vagina, that's not a thing, because in my mind I always thought
shoot up there.
Hold on, I always thought that sperm died once they were like in the free air. Is that true?
No, you know what? That sperm that's on your back, on your stomach, or wherever it is,
all over
you know
my face,
it is, all over your body,
whatever is covered in sperm.
It's like coffee with
Greta. Yeah, exactly. It's yeah. going. That fluid is going to dry up.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, because sometimes I become psychotic and I'm just like, you came on my leg and it's going to march into my vagina.
No, it's not going to march.
Okay.
I love the things that you're crazy about and the other things you don't care about.
I know.
It's like you might want to switch those around.
I'm curious, though, inside the body, like if a man comes inside of you, how long does the sperm live then if it's in that nice vaginal environment?
You know what? That's a really good question. And the way that I'm going to answer that is, you know, when I have someone that's trying to get pregnant mm-hmm. and, you know, they ovulate, and when you get that big happy face on, you know, the ovulation predictor kit, boom, have sex. And then you skip a day and then you have sex again. So I'm going to say like a good 48 hours.
Ew.
Yeah.
Men are disgusting.
Because remember, that egg, once it's released from the ovary, has to travel down the tube.
Right.
Sperms, like, you know, going
I need to watch some new, like, video.
Yes.
Like, I need a health class video.
I have a pregnancy question.
Give it to me, Lo.
So, I have never known if you're ovulating. Mm-hmm. Your egg travels down, it's in your cervix, you have sex. If your egg makes its way into the vagina, can it be fertilized there and then crawl its way back up into the cervix and implant itself on a wall?
No.
Or does the egg have to be in the cervix?
Isn't that an atopic
pregnancy
to be fertilized?
Any pregnancy outside of the uterus is an ectopic pregnancy. So you can have a cervical
ectopic. I mean, the uterus. Not your cervix, sorry.
You can have ovarian. It can be in the tube. That is not normal. But there's not going to be an egg that's, like, hanging out inside the vagina and, you know, meets the sperm. And then they, like, hitch back into the cervix and then travel back into the uterus. That's not happening.
They're not trying any new clubs.
All right. So you're getting pregnant in your uterus.
We hope that you're getting pregnant in your uterus.
Well, because if you don't, then it's a problem.
Yeah,
and
it's a big problem.
I have a friend who had an ectopic pregnancy, and it was really, really scary.
I actually saw a woman about a month ago that I saw in the ER that almost died from an ectopic pregnancy. She passed out in her bathroom, came to the ER. Her blood count was like 5.
Whoa.
Normal hemoglobin is like, or blood count if we're going to keep it simple, it's like 11 to 12. Her heart rate was like 150. She was like in shock.
That's crazy.
All
That's
because crazy. She didn't know she was pregnant, you know, had this terrible pain, passed out. So, yeah, it's a really big deal.
Do you think you should just take a pregnancy test every month if you're sexually active?
If you're not getting your period,
if you're not getting your period, absolutely.
Just to be, like, just safe, you know?
Okay, wait, I have some questions.
Just to know what's going on in your body.
I have some questions for our gay listeners.
Sure. I happen to be gay. So.
Yeah, so there you go.
Give it to
so, I mean, like, some of my girlfriends that are gay, some of my lesbian women, I think some of them are, like, really stay on top of their feminine appointments and checkups and whatever. But I think a lot of them think that since they're not having sex with men, which I also recognize men are, for the most part, gross. If they're not having sex with men, then they think they're, like, exempt from getting checked for all of this shit. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Big no.
Yeah.
You gotta come.
Yeah.
I mean, your girl parts are no different than anybody else's girl parts. And don't forget, you know, girls who see other girls are having some interesting fun in the bedroom, whether it's sex toys. I see a lot of lesbian women that get STIs from sharing unclean toys.
Right.
You know?
I know a lot that with like cleaning sex toys, for example.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how do you clean a sex toy? Just soap?
There are cleaners that come with sex toys. You can buy them at sex shops and stuff like that. But I feel like this goes across the board. Anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not very good at anal sex. But
what a lie.
When you put something in your butthole, don't it should not in go into your vagina.
No.
Never.
No.
I know this is a hard no. I'm not asking. I'm making
be
a statement.
Pissed off at you if you do that.
I know.
You know, it's all these rap songs. That's all they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's that one about?
Truffle butter. It's disgusting. Okay, we're not going to go there. Honestly, like, I don't get... If you haven't listened to many episodes of our podcast, I am not the one that gets grossed out easily. I'm usually the one saying the gross stuff. Truffle butter, and when people do the tongue in between two fingers sign for eating a girl out, are two things that make me... want to die.
Okay. Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that.
So for all of our lesbian women listening to this, or, you know, bisexual, bi
or if you don't identify
people,
as anything,
right?
Whatever you're doing,
go and get checked. Go and get
a vagina.
Go and get checked out.
Yeah,
because I got chlamydia in a threesome, and I was mainly sleeping with the woman. Okay, so just want to put it out there.
Yeah.
And this
I mean,
is
any
thing.
Transfer of bodily fluid, right?
There it is. And this is the thing with the whole chlamydia thing. You know, the people that we are routinely screening for chlamydia is anyone that's 25 and under, okay? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the women that I diagnose with chlamydia, I mean, they don't know. They don't have any symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love, not really, when I have to make that phone call. What's up, girl? You got chlamydia.
Is
that how you start it? What's up, girl? You got chlamydia?
You know what? I'm just like, remember, I'm your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Girl, this is Dr. Angela.
Guess what?
I got your results. You got chlamydia.
Yeah.
Okay, who are you sleeping with? Well, they probably have it too.
Yeah.
So y'all need to be treated.
The herpes phone call is worse, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you make people come in and talk to you face-to-face for that one?
I do. Because, I mean, you know, if you...
That's devastating.
That's devastating. And talk about people being pissed. I'm like, don't shoot the messenger. I didn't give it to you.
That's funny.
You know?
Yeah,
I think that there's such a stigma around STDs and around herpes and even around HIV. Mm-hmm. Like, things that medicine has come so far with. Like, if you have an STD, chances are you can get rid of it.
Yes.
My friend has HIV, and he's on so many medicine or so much medicine that he's not even traceable in his blood anymore.
Right. So I just watched this Vice documentary, Countdown to Zero, not too long ago, which is all about HIV and, like, how far it's come. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how for big medical companies, like, it's almost like people want people to stay sick,
yeah,
right? Well, so
yeah,
that people stay,
so they buy the medicine. Yep.
I know. I mean,
pharmaceuticals are a huge industry.
When my mom was sick with cancer, mm-hmm, before she died, I was like fully, I created a conspiracy theory in my head, which I still think is real, that, like, there is a cure for cancer, but chemo is such a huge industry, cancer drugs, mm-hmm, all of this shit is such a huge industry that, like, if there were to be a cure, just like if there were to be a cure for the common cold, just like if there were to be, mm-hmm, a full cure for HIV, then how would anyone make any money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, going on to that, I would like to talk about the Zika virus.
Wait, but I wasn't done with my HIV and stigma question about STDs. Mm-hmm. Like, would you say that, for the most part, all of these things, whether it's like crabs, chlamydia, what? Like scabies, isn't that another one?
Yeah.
Crabs, syphilis,
Sex in the City,
all of this shit. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say that for the most part, herpes, all of these things now you can sort of treat and maintain to be like not a problem?
Most STIs, there's definitely, you know, treatment for, you know, something to kind of keep things at bay. However, you know, there are certain ones, you know, herpes being one of them, I call that the gift that keeps on giving, that there's like no cure for. There's no cure for herpes. So once you got that, you got it. But, you know, we can give you medicine to decrease outbreaks and frequency of herpes.
But if you have herpes, mm-hmm, when you have sex with someone, even, okay, so say you are having sex with your partner and you aren't in an outbreak, but if you have sex unprotected, will that person definitely get it, or do you need to be in an outbreak for them to get it?
That's a fantastic question. Certainly, when you have an active outbreak, that increases the risk of you spreading it to someone. But even if you don't have an outbreak, you can still pass that to someone. And the other thing that I'm going to say about herpes, and this was like a myth that everybody kept getting confused. Everyone kept confusing. Oh my gosh, I just have cold sores. That's HSV-1. Oh my gosh, I just have, you know, genital lesions. That's HSV-2. You can get herpes, HSV-1 or 2, in either place. Mm-hmm. If your partner happens to have a cold sore on their mouth and, you know, goes downtown and visits your vagina, you can get herpes that way. I've seen a ton of that.
Mm. Right.
So just be careful.
Yeah. Oh,
geez, guys. This is
terrible.
Now you might want to practice my way of living.
What, wait till you're in love and pray that the person you fall in love with doesn't have herpes?
You know, a little bit of that.
Jilly, your Zika question.
So I wanted to talk about Zika because they've just now said that it can be transferred sexually.
Yep.
So what, I guess that's like another reason to make sure you're really practicing safe sex. Mm-hmm. I guess, have you like seen any cases of Zika? Like, what are the prevention? Is it just not going to like certain countries where
it's happening?
I need to know all about it.
This is the deal with Zika. Number one, do not knowingly or willingly put yourself in harm's way. I mean, just fucking be smart.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, and you know, I have some patients and, you know, folks that I talk to that are the most brilliant people career-wise that you'll ever meet. But just like common sense-wise, they just miss the boat.
Yeah.
Do not travel to places where this is rampant. Mm. That's number one. Number two, you know, screens are our friends. You know, put screens in your windows. Don't go to places where the water is standing still. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, bowls outside, you know, fountains that are, you know, harbingers or attract mosquitoes.
Yeah.
You know, wear you know, insect repellent. You know, I just recently wrote about this. My favorite ones, and this is like such a complete throwback, Avon Skin So Soft.
You can also make your own.
Yes.
They have all these blogs now of how to make your own bug spray.
Right. So, you know, wear that. And it's not just about the women now because, as you said,
it's sexually transmitted. Yeah.
So if your man has gone to a place where, you know, the mosquitoes are rampant and
like
Zika
Brazil,
is there.
Where my boyfriend goes all the time.
Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. You know, these are all the hot spots that we like to visit.
If you are a man and you have been in Brazil or Puerto Rico or whatever, mm-hmm. can you get tested for Zika? Because I've heard that in men, it like really doesn't present itself at all.
Well, it might not really present itself in women either. I mean, and this is the thing. What are the symptoms? They're like viral.
Yeah, it's
you
like
know,
a little
fever,
sickness.
Chills, you
right.
know, what muscle aches, whatever. Yeah. But this is the thing. With regards to sex, if there's been an exposure or you're worried about an exposure, you either do not have sex for the entire pregnancy. And I mean, really, who's doing that? Or you gotta wear condoms and wear condoms the right way.
What does wearing condoms the right way mean?
You know, leaving it on and pulling it out with the condom still on.
Oh, yeah.
That's the right way.
Got it.
I have a question. As a woman, say you're not pregnant, but you're interested in getting pregnant in the next few years and you get Zika. I know that nobody really knows yet, but like, what are the long-term effects of that? Like, say I got Zika today, and I want to have a baby in a year or 2 years.
There's not going to be any repercussions from that.
Okay.
Because remember, this is transient. You're going to get rid of this.
How long does it take to leave your body once you've had it?
I've heard it can live in the sperms for like 6 months.
I think that actually the recommendation, and I'm going to have to look this up, so don't quote me on this.
Yeah.
But, you know, most people are recommending, you know, not getting pregnant for like, you know, 3 to 6 month time frame after you've been to an area that had the Zika virus.
Okay.
And then also, what if you're like with someone that has it and you both have it and you keep giving it to each other back and forth?
Is that possible?
Well, if you're a carrier and you guys haven't been cured, absolutely.
Oh, shit.
Sexually transmitted.
Yeah.
One of my good friend's fathers, he's a neonatologist, and he actually, he's the best. He's the dean of public health at CUNY, but he was saying that Zika is a perfect example of how like global warming is real, because it's like we are so uneducated about Zika because we've never been presented with mosquitoes that are carriers until now, when like it's the climate's getting warmer and everything is changing, and now we have these like crazy bugs that we've never had before because it's getting hot. Isn't that crazy?
Dun,
that
dun, is crazy. Dun. The end of the world.
Wait, can we talk about discharge really quickly?
Yeah, let's talk about something happy, like discharge.
Yeah.
I know, got discharged.
We can still talk about whatever we want.
Yeah. I know that our time is dwindling, but discharge, I think, we all have it, you know?
Yeah, so. Can you please say that again? We all have it.
Yeah, everyone has discharge.
It's normal.
Yes.
Also, like,
the absence of it is like, should raise your eyebrows, right?
Yeah.
What does the absence of it mean? Sorry.
Dry vagina, painful sex.
Oh. But
like,
is it an
menopause.
Indicator of like something weird going on?
Menopause.
Damn.
Ovarian failure. You know.
Horrible things.
Yeah, not good
things.
Well,
I guess if you're like a menopause may not be horrible if you are ready for that phase in your life.
I can't speak on that yet. I have two discharge questions.
Give it to
me. Both of which are very specific.
Okay.
One. If I'm exercising and I am done exercising and I take off my workout pants and I'm like, oh, that's odd. My discharge is kind of red and it's not my period times. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay. Should I go to the, I mean,
honestly,
should my friend go to the, go to the doctor?
Your friend. If it persists, yes, because maybe it is spotting, and spotting can certainly be a sign of some kind of infection.
Got it.
It might not be anything.
Can you just have brown kind of discharge and be healthy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So discharge can come in different colors.
This is my general rule of thumb with discharge. As long as it doesn't itch, burn, or smell bad, it's likely normal.
Okay. Mm. Now, my second question about discharge. Sometimes I, like, maybe like a couple days before my period, sometimes I'll have like wads of like clear discharge, like come out of my vagina. Yeah. When I go to poop, I'm being serious, you guys. And I have been I've talked to other gynecologists about this before, but like sometimes it can happen and I don't know what's going on. It's like, is it a yeast infection or something? It doesn't feel like a yeast infection, but it's just so.
So what did I just say to you? As long as it doesn't itch, burn, or smell bad. And the other thing, and I'm happy you asked that because, you know, I'm happy that you're paying attention to the quality of your discharge.
Yeah.
This is the thing about discharge. Depending on where you are in your menstrual cycle, sometimes there's more of it, sometimes there's less of it, sometimes it's thicker, sometimes it's thinner. Completely normal.
Sometimes I can have so much discharge that it feels like I pee my pants.
Well, aren't you lucky? You're like a 15-year-old.
Am I? Maybe I'm just horny all the time.
Yeah, I'm just walking around wet all the time. Ready to go.
Okay. I had actually a really great question before we started about that I want to bring up. That it was, she asked, like, can your vagina know if a guy's wrong for you or a girl?
Yeah,
whoever you're with.
I think yes.
I'm going to say yeah. You know, be in tune with your vagina. Yeah.
If it's
listen
like not
her.
Having it, then
yeah.
No.
If it's not having it, if it's all of a sudden itchy, all of a sudden swollen.
Yeah, if like if the if your partner is making your vagina inflamed and like giving you yeasties and
girl,
stuff
run.
Like that.
But what if you like love them and you like have a great and you like talk about it and that's just the problem?
Well, then you should probably try your hardest to fall out of love with them.
I have an experience.
I have experienced this twice. Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, you have. I remember you telling me this when you were dating someone once.
So in college, once, with this one boyfriend, turns out I was allergic to him.
Yep.
I thought that I had herpes, and the UCLA Medical Center diagnosed me as such, and it turns out no herpes. I was having a severe allergic reaction to his semen where it burned my skin off. Swear to God.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
I mean, honestly,
so that happened to me. That was the first one. And then the second one was another boyfriend, and each time we would try to have sex, it would be so painful. Like, it was like burning inside, all these things. I went to all these specialists, and finally the specialist was like, well, your pelvic floor muscles are extremely tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to the vagina physical therapist.
Oh my God, that's
and
amazing.
And I broke up with him, but it was my body literally rejecting him. My body was rejecting
him. Your pelvis was like, nope.
My girlfriend.
And every single person since that guy, no problem at all.
Yeah.
My girlfriend had the same thing happen. She like could not have sex with her boyfriend. It hurt her so much. She thought she had a bunch of UTIs, all the stuff. They broke up. Vagina, fine. Yeah. My boyfriend has a joke about it. Yeah. How the vagina is amazing and it can like, it like has a conscience and knows things before you know it. But a dick will never do that for you.
No, my heart's in my vagina.
Yeah.
Your vagina knows.
Your vagina does know.
And
isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting.
Fascinating to me.
For all of the women listening to this that haven't explored their vaginas, because I feel like a lot of women, like I was such a freak as a kid that I was like sticking my finger in my vagina the second
good
I realized it was open. You know what I mean? The second I realized it was there, I was like, what is this? You should like finger yourself. I think that everyone should definitely do that to just like know what's going on
up
there.
Well, how about start by just looking at your vagina?
Yeah, it's true. Use that mirror in your bronzer compact, girl.
10 times mirror.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that might be a little too
intense. I think that, like look at the vagina, finger your vagina, touch your vagina, masturbate. I don't know. All of these things I think are really important to having your mind body be one.
I think just having like a good fundamental knowledge of like your body parts and how they should be functioning is
absolutely
important, because when something's not working the right way, like that's when you need to take note of that.
Yeah,
like if you can't self-identify that like there's a problem, you gotta
so one of the take-home messages for today is going to be get to know your vagina.
Get to know your body.
Get to know it.
Ladies, do we have any other questions?
Is it time for sex exploration?
I don't know. Jillian and I kind of think that we've been sex exploring the whole time. I guess I don't know if there's anything left in me right now.
I've asked so many questions.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Well, it's about swallowing cum. Okay. Like, I refuse. And I love it when guys are like, oh, there's protein in it. Oh, it's good for you. Is semen swallowing good for you?
Girl, I am still waiting for some kind of nutritional facts to come out on.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, maybe if you, you know, look on the side of a penis, it might say, you know, 10% protein, 5% carbs.
If I have it doesn't not yet say that, that, don't swallow it.
Exactly.
Grandma.
I have not yet.
I should
yet
just
seen
be like, I'm on a diet and I can't afford these loose calories. Yeah. So thank you. That's okay. Right.
I mean,
so that's
probably
good.
Is a lot of calories.
I don't know. Ugh, I don't want to think about that. That was my semen question.
That's our sex floor question. For
I think that might be the sex exploration.
I just had a question, but I forgot it. So when I remember it, I'll call you, Dr. Angela.
Call me.
I'll ask you.
Anytime.
We're all going to come to New
Jersey.
We're
all coming to
New
Jersey.
We are. And we're all taking a vagina field trip.
Yeah. I will take really good care of your vaginas.
Thank you. Oh, I remember my question.
Oh, yes.
Are all gynecologists OBGYNs?
No.
Right.
Some people give up, you know, the practice of obstetrics and just practice gynecology.
Obstetrics is the baby.
That's the baby
right?
part. You got
do you
it.
Love okay. delivering babies?
I do love delivering
is
babies.
Is it so cute and fun?
Most of the time, it's very cute.
I would find that to be crazy.
It is crazy.
My sister had like 38-hour labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, what's the longest labor you've ever...
It's funny you should ask that. Yesterday, I assisted on a C-section for a woman that was in labor for 4 days.
Oh, my damn. God.
What? So you had to do a C-section?
Failed induction. Failed induction.
That was like my sister.
But yeah. Was the baby healthy?
The baby C-section. Was fantastic.
Oh,
baby was
so
fantastic.
Crazy.
What's the heaviest baby that you've ever seen? Like 12 pounds? I feel like that
personally,
would be nuts.
I've delivered a baby that was 11 pounds some ounces.
Oh my god,
that's damn
big.
Yeah, that's a
like
big baby.
I need to have like 6 pounds. I can't.
And that was vaginal.
Oh my god. My mom had me and my sister a C-section babies, and I remember her scar like in her lower abdomen. Uh-huh. I remember thinking it was very Frankenstein-y. And are they like that now?
No.
Okay. Are they cute and delicate?
I'm
going to
tell you, the incisions these days, and you know, I'm not giving myself a shout out or a plug. But you know, when I put you back together, you're not even going to be able to tell I was there.
That's really? Amazing.
Like my I had a C-section. I just have one daughter because I was afraid of labor. I'm going to just tell you that.
Huh. So did you have a planned C-section?
I had an elective C-section.
All right.
Pick the date and everything. And I knew I was only having one. I knew we were only going to have one. But you can barely even see my incision, and it's small.
So that's if you cool. have a C-section, if your first baby is delivered via C-section, is the recommendation that you only have one more child?
No.
I've heard
absolutely
that.
Not, girl. No.
I feel like, Lo, you have all these like strange facts
but
where I'm wondering
what,
where
Lo,
you're reading
I'm
them
so
from.
Happy that you're asking because you're not the only one that thinks these things.
Uh-huh.
No. I did a C-section woman yesterday. It was her 4th C-section.
Damn.
Okay. It was a hot mess. The surgery was really hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like her 4th C-section. And just because you have one C-section doesn't mean that you have to have subsequent C-sections.
Right.
It really
oh,
is
really?
Going to depend on... What was the indication for the first C-section?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Because I've always thought that, you know, like if your first baby is born through C-section, then all your other babies are going to be C-section babies.
I don't think I'd want to have a baby out of my vagina. Mm-hmm. I think that scares me.
I think I would.
I'd rather push it out of there.
It scared me too, which is why I didn't do it.
I don't know. I have, like, because of my lupus, my doctor is like, if you were to ever get pregnant, you'd be a high-risk pregnancy because I have have really bad inflammation issues. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like my hips moving all around and my vagina, everything going all over the place, I would just be like a fucking nightmare for me.
You know what? But this is what I'm going to tell you. You know, I've taken care of a lot of ladies that have lupus in pregnancy, and they do just fine. They don't all have C-sections.
Yeah.
So don't let that scare you.
Well, lucky for me, I'm not planning on having a baby for like 300 years. So... By 300, right. 300, I mean like 5 to 10. So,
which feels like 300.
Right.
Oh my gosh! Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been so amazing.
This is my favorite
I
episode.
So much.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is my favorite episode
so far for having me.
And
you know,
It's the best. I feel like this is what our show is all about.
I know. We're going to have to do a part two.
Because please.
I have more questions.
Girl, ask.
We should also get our listeners to send in their questions.
Oh,
and then
great
we can
idea.
Have Dr. Angela
great
back.
Absolutely.
And we can answer it because probably there's people out there that have questions that we all really need to know the answer.
Yeah, and that we did not ask.
Yeah.
100,000,000%.
Yes. So at the end of each episode, we have our guest shout out a woman that they admire and that has been impactful to some capacity in your life. And who is the woman that you choose?
The woman that I'm going to shout out is my beautiful wife, Tasha.
Hi,
call her
Tasha.
Miss
hey,
Bowie.
Tasha. Miss Bowie.
Yeah, Miss Bowie. And, you know, she holds it down at home. She's an amazing mom to our daughter. Oh. And certainly she allows me to do and be Dr. Angela. I couldn't do any of this without her.
That's so nice.
See, guys, I'm looking for that.
Partnership.
I'm
the
looking
power
for someone
of partnership.
To talk about me that way or someone I can I talk to you about that way.
That's so cute.
I love
that's
it.
Really sweet.
That was beautiful.
I love that.
Oh, thank you.
I feel inspired.
All right, listeners. So if you have any questions for Dr. Angela, you can ask them on her Facebook page, facebook.com/AskDrAngela. Or, because we want to have you on again, you can email us your questions at ladylovin.com. There's a contact form you can fill out. And we've been reading all of your emails that you have been sending us. So thank you so much. Subscribe to our show for more great episodes. And Dr. Angela, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, ladies.
We're
love
thrilled.
You
oh, it was the best episode. Thank you.
See you next week, guys.